This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. We're talking about the five operas in this season of the Santa Fe Opera, and our guest is Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled, now in its 18th year. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet on the Opera Grounds. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte.
And today we are talking about Mozart's Don Giovanni.
Yeah.
Very famous, very often performed opera, beloved opera by Mozart. And of course, it has a long history, namely the Don Juan myth.
Yeah, it goes back a long way to the 1600s to a monk dreamed up Don Juan, who is Don Giovanni, Tirso de Molina.
Now, you wonder about Tirso de Molina's own life and history, but that's something we'll probably never know.
Exactly, and maybe just as well. Some things may or may not ever change. So he wrote, of course, from a Catholic point of view about this terrible man who seduced women right, left, and center, didn't care anything about them whatsoever. There's really two stories in this whole piece. There's the story of Don Juan and his conquests and the way he lives. The opera deals with the day in the life of Don Giovanni and what goes on and how many seductions. And I mean, he throws a party in the middle of this opera and he says, give them plenty of wine and food. And when they've had plenty of wine, I'll have 10 more names for the list of seductions tomorrow morning. Well, that's going sort of amazing, 10 more overnight. Tirso Molina, so he tells us the tale of the reprobate, the terrible man who goes out seducing women. And then the other part of it is much more serious. The Don Juan kills the father of one of these seduced women. The father is buried but doesn't leave the planet. He comes back as the figure of divine retribution to make Don Giovanni, Don Juan in this case, pay for his sins, and he doesn't repent, so he drags him off to hell. Now, that's the basic story, and you can deal with it many ways. It's been addressed many, many ways. Writers and composers have been fascinated by this tale over the eons, ever since the 1600s. It's still with us. You know, the story is still there. Don Juan is still with us, walking the streets. I mean, I bet there's many listeners out there, myself included, who have fallen for someone whose attitude is love him and leave him. it's not a strange character at all. But in the opera, what about Don Giovanni in the opera? I mean, why did Mozart take on this character?
Well, that was an interesting piece of your book, is part of it was the audience he was playing for, the city that he was playing to.
Yeah, exactly. He'd had an enormous success with The Marriage of Figaro, which is the opera that came before this, with his librettist Lorenzo da Ponte. These two must have had a marvelous time together. They partied, and when they went to Prague, that Marriage of Figaro was a roaring success. So they thought, well, we'll do our next opera here too. And because it wasn't Vienna and as formal as the court liked their operas, they decided they could have a little more fun in Prague and that they would write about Don Giovanni. There was a third party who they turned to for inspiration. That was Casanova, who at the time was writing the diaries of all his various seductions. So the scene is, it's a wonderful scene. I don't know if it was imagined or not, but the three of them would carouse in Prague and party and dream up the stories of Don Giovanni, based some of them on the diaries of Casanova. So this was never intended to be a serious work of art. It is certainly, but not a tragedy. There's nothing tragic about this, even though he is dragged off to hell at the end. It's pure melodrama. In fact, one of the most successful versions of this story were the puppet shows that they would have in the parks and all over Germany. That was a great form of entertainment for everybody. The puppet shows where the women would be beating Don Giovanni over the head, and it was fun. I mean, and he's dragged off at the end. Everybody cheered as the whole set went went up in flames. And you know, it still happens. We still have the hellfire. But in our more secular times, it's not so much perhaps about that ending, divine retribution, the supernatural takes over, as what is going on here. Many things are going on. Mozart is struggling at a time where the aristocracy, royalty, were his employers, his bosses. He had to do as he was told. He was a lesser being. He was a mere musician. And they're struggling. The people are struggling against this. It's the time of the Enlightenment. He was also a Mason. He believed in brotherly love and equality for all. He also stood up for women. Even though the women in this opera may appear to be put down one after the other, they're strong characters, and they're not going to give up without a fight. So Mozart is looking at all of this and coming from his own background, his own experience with his father. We may talk about that a little down the road. His father was totally domineering. He managed his career from the time he was a young child, playing before the heads of Europe because he was a child virtuoso. But the father never really let go of that hold, and Mozart resented it. Especially once he got married, he didn't want to be told what to do all the time. So the father died during the composition of Don Giovanni. So I think there's some of that in there as well.
Interesting.
There's a lot of interesting sort of threads. They called the opera a drama giocosa. So this is a drama, yes, but it's lightly handled. It's fun, and it's not to be taken too seriously. The other interesting thing that Mozart does in this opera is that he sort of crosses genres. At his time, the operas were either opera seria, serious operas about kings and royalty and, you know, right virtues, or they could be buffa, which is straight comedy that came from the Commedia dell'arte, the street comedy plays of the time. In this opera, he sort of crosses over. Some of the characters are more serious and others are pure buffa characters, and it works. It's a first for the time, and though Mozart never broke any major musical boundaries, in this case, he's blending two. And as time went on, of course, you could do this. It didn't have to be comedy or tragedy. You could blend the two. And he does that beautifully in this piece.
So should we go through the story at least a little bit? Because we want to hear some of the music.
Yeah, I thought we might do it in terms of the characters involved and talk about them. The first one that we meet in the beginning of the opera is Donna Anna. As the curtain opens, it's the early hours or the middle of the night, whatever, and Don Giovanni and Leporello, his sidekick, his servant, are in the street approaching a house. And Don Giovanni is in a cape, and he goes into the rooms of Donna Anna. Now, Donna Anna is an interesting character, not quite as innocent maybe as she may appear, because she thought that the man calling on her in the middle of the night was her fiancé, so she lets him in. In fact, it's not. It's Giovanni who comes in. He either does or doesn't make love to her. That depends on the director as to what happens. But in the midst of it, she screams rape, and she makes a terrible hullabaloo, and he vanishes, and she tries to grab hold of him, of his cape, of anything, to hold on till someone comes to her aid. And she says, "Who are you?" And the answer is great, because it goes through the whole piece. He says, "Who I am, you shall not know." So it gives him a sort of a timeless...
A man of mystery.
He's not going to be easily pinpointed. So he is escaping when her father, the commendatore, comes in his light shirt, sword in hand, and challenges this man to a duel. Don Giovanni would not fight the commendatore. He's an older man, and he knows what would happen. He would prefer not to, but he's sort of boxed in. He has to. They fight, and the commendatore is killed and dies, and Giovanni disappears. He disappears a lot in this opera.
So part one goes into a stranger's house, rapes her, comes near to raping her, and then kills her father.
Kills her father and vanishes. Afterwards, she is...
So he's like a double felon already.
Yeah, he's not a savory character. He's the anti-hero. And sometimes we love to love anti-heroes. They do all bad things and we still like them. What's that about, if you think about it?
Or we don't. You can sit through the whole opera and not like him.
Well, that also comes down then to the performance of the artist singing that role. The music is fabulous. He doesn't actually have any big arias. That's another interesting aspect of this character. The line I like best to describe Don Giovanni is, "Don Giovanni exists only in the moment of the music." Music, you hear a piece of music, a little song, anything you listen to, and it only exists in the moment you're listening to it. As soon as the last chord or the last it ends, it's gone until the next time. Don Giovanni is like that. That's how he can seduce 2,065 women. Which is ridiculous, of course.
In what time period? Never mind.
Right, exactly. So he is more of an idea, and that's another aspect of this character. He comes at you so many ways, and the fact that he's not given a full-fledged aria throughout is amazing. There is one little short one, which I'll play for you in a little while. But meantime, to get back to Donna Anna, she is now distraught over her father's dead body, and her fiancé, Don Ottavio, comes in, and she turns on him, and she says, "This man took my honor, and you have to go and avenge me." Don Ottavio stands by. He's not one of the strongest of Mozart's characters, so he has beautiful music to sing. But you would hear her anger as Donna Anna sings, "Or sai chi l'onore." So that's the first conquest of the day for Don Giovanni, Donna Anna.
And so we're going to organize our program today by women whom Don Giovanni dishonors. The next one is Elvira.
Well, they all come back for more, so it can't be all bad marriage.
Well, that's the thing, and that leads to a kind of complexity that a lot of women, for example, who are victims of domestic violence do not leave their abusers.
Yes, you're right.
It's sort of a similar dynamic.
Yeah, there's a fascination, whatever it is. Well, the next one we meet is Donna Elvira, another angry lady you'll hear in her music. After Don Giovanni escapes from the murder of the Commendatore, he and Leporello are in a street. Another interesting aspect of this opera is the way it's not set anywhere sort of. It's in a sort of a spaceless, nameless place. This is in a sort of dark, a dark place where you don't see rooms or streets or gardens.
But there's nobles and people.
Yeah, but the way they've represented part of this is, for instance, with four enormous rearing horses who are set on stage at the funeral cortege of the Commendatore. But there's really not a lot of props, so there's no real place that this is set in, which is part of its sort of interesting, sort of dreamlike quality, I suppose. Anyway, they are supposedly in a street when a carriage comes up and lets a lady down. She looks a little tired. She's been traveling a long time, and she gets out of the carriage. She's sort of unceremoniously left in the middle of this dark space, and she asks, where is Don Giovanni? She has been abandoned. Donna Elvira, in some previous, not incarnation, but beforehand, had been actually married to Don Giovanni. He abducted her from a convent. He loved taking people from convents and married her, stayed with her 3 days, and then vanished. And now she has come to find him. And she is the one character who will not let go. She is determined. She's going to have vengeance. She's also the one of the three women, like you touched on just now, who will always seek for his forgiveness for the Don. She will find a way to try and say, well, you know, to try and make excuses for him, knowing how evil he is. She is the one who stands up for him, and in the end, the one who pleads for his life to no avail. So let's hear a little of Donna Elvira's entrance aria. And that is Donna Elvira from Don Giovanni. The recording that we're playing today is with Tomova Sinto singing Donna Anna. Agnes Balsa, you just heard, is Elvira. Kathleen Battle, Zerlina. And the wonderful Samuel Raimi sings the Don. And in a wonderful footnote, too, I think, Leporello, who is the servant, is Ferruccio Furlanetto, who's one of the most respected senior, maybe, singers of our time, who's still having a glorious career. In this, he plays the servant role. So when they come face to face, the Don comes out of the shadows because he's always up for helping a lady in distress, and he goes rushing to her rescue. They see one another, and they're both shocked. She's amazed that here he is, and he's appalled that he's chatting up the wrong lady. So again, he vanishes. He just disappears, and he says, Leporello will explain everything. And here comes a really cruel little piece, a little aria, the catalogue aria, in which Leporello, who is delighted to tell Elvira of the thousands of conquests that the Don has had. She's just another one, and he has no sympathy for her. He's rather a cold character. He's sort of a split-off of the Don, equally bad. I mean, sometimes they change costumes, and you can't tell who is a Don and who is Leporello. That happens twice in this piece. In one production we did here, we had two brothers, two black singers, actually, who interchanged the two roles. It was hard to tell who was who. So there is that sort of alter ego aspect to Leporello and the Don, that sometimes he is the sort of the one who's trying to rein him in, you can't behave like this. And he says to him at one point, you know, you need to give up women. And the Don says, how can I give up women? They're more important to me than food and drink, and they're the air I breathe are the women. Collectively, though, to him it doesn't matter who it is, one woman or another, they're all alike. And in this very cruel little catalogue aria, Leporello explains what sort of women they are. Some are from convents, some are old women, some are young women. He goes through the full gamut, and in Spain alone there are 1,003 conquests.
And Leporello is an interesting character because he's certainly not a person of any great notable moral character in any way. He's also exploited labor. I mean, he is being kind of abusively treated, or he's not being very well treated by Don Giovanni, who doesn't pay him very much, and he sort of wants to get out, but he can't really find a new job, and so...
No, he has him completely under his thumb. There are perks, if we call it a perk. At one point, Don Giovanni goes to Donna Elvira's house, and he doesn't want to see her. He wants to flirt with the maid at the back window, so he gives his hat and cape to Leporello. He says, you pretend to be Elvira. She'll be thrilled to bits to see you. Invite her down to the garden. Which he does, and Leporello can or cannot make love to Donna Elvira. I mean, that's shocking. While Giovanni's around the back of the house singing this meltingly gorgeous aria on his mandolin to Elvira's servant, hoping to make way with her. So there are those moments. On the other hand, maybe Leporello is a victim. Now, this is somewhat up to the director as to how to choose to interpret the character. He could be very antagonistic to the Don throughout, or he could be totally under his thumb. At one point, Don Giovanni laughing.
Or some of both.
Yes, right.
If it's like real life.
Yeah. At one point, Don Giovanni tells him, well, on my way to the churchyard, I seduced and slept with your girlfriend, Leporello. What are you going to do about that? Right. And he's appalled and he's angry, but what can he do? You know, it's intricate. I mean, this opera has such complexity to it, to these characters. It seems so simple, but there's a lot more going on. But I think we should hear a little of the catalogue aria here from Leporello.
Ma la luna, il catalogo è questo, delle belle chiamò il padron mio, un catalogo è che ho fatto io. Osservate, leggete con me, osservate, leggete con me. In Italia 640, Lavagna 231, vinto in Francia in Turchia 91, ma in Spagna sono già mille tre. Ma tra queste contadine, cameriere cittadine, a contesse baronesse, marchesane principesse, mi mando d'ogni età, d'ogni età. In Italia, 640, in Lavagna, 231, vento in Francia, in Turchia, 91, ma in Spagna sono già mille tre. Tra queste contadine, cameriere, cittadine, ma contesse parole, se mancosane, principesse, e fantasie, ogni cosa, ogni cosa, ogni cosa, ogni cosa.
That was Leporello singing about some of the several thousand women that Don Giovanni has seduced.
Mille tre, 1,003 in Spain alone.
In Spain alone.
Yeah, this was set supposedly in Seville. That's what it says in the directions.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the voices in opera. This Leporello is a bass.
Yes. Don Giovanni is a baritone.
He's a baritone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of the time, I don't know why, your heroes are tenors and the bad guys have lower voices. How does that work in opera?
Not at that time. At that time, tenors were really a non-event. Remember, we're not long coming out of the age of the castratos, the castrati singers, who had that very high voice. And tenors were a non-event. And when the castrati went away, it wasn't tenors who took on those roles. It was women who had the deeper range who became took the roles of the castrati. So here we have, and Mozart does this a lot, actually, with his singers, the lead character is a baritone. And the Leporello, his sidekick, the bass, so that you've got wonderful opportunity here to blend those two voices together. And he does that a lot. The Commendatore is also a bass, which you would expect. The sepulchral character who's risen from the grave is a bass. The three leading ladies are all sopranos. There's no mezzo in this piece. They're all sopranos. They all have this wonderful higher register. And it's just that Don Ottavio suffers a little bit, I think, because he is the tenor and they were not so important. He is the one character in this piece, Donna Anna's fiancé, who is from opera seria. He gets out, sings his aria, leaves the stage. He doesn't have interaction much with anybody else, and he doesn't have much action on interaction with the plot or effect on it. So that's the lineup. We go from one glorious soprano to another. But that Leporello has to be one of the great voices of all time, with Ferruccio Forlanetto singing Leporello. The next conquest of the day, then, is Zerlina. Zerlina is a peasant girl, and they're cruising, Don Giovanni and Leporello, and they come across a peasant wedding, or the preparations for a wedding. Zerlina, she goes up to him, and she introduces her fiancé, Mazzetto, who's sort of a country bumpkin, and the Don puts his eye on her. He wants Zerlina the night before the wedding. There was a tradition earlier in this time in the aristocracy of le droit de seigneur, the right of the lord of the manor to sleep with any one of his servant girls before the wedding if he so chose. Now, at this time, that law was supposed to have been done away with. And in the Marriage of Figaro, this comes up too, because the count in that opera fancies Susanna, his wife's servant. And he tells her, no, I've given up that law. But in fact, he hasn't really. If he can get his way with her, he will.
What was that all about, that the firstborn child would actually belong to the lord of the manor?
Well, it could. It could very easily. I mean, they had many, many children in those days, remember, before birth control. So anyway, he's come across this wedding, and she's flattered. You know, the lord of the manor, he's speaking to me, and he's going to take me to show me his beautiful gardens and his house. And she goes along, and he gives her a line that I challenge any woman to resist. I mean, the music of this is so incredible. He says, give me your hand, and I'll show you. He said, I love your eyes, your hands. I mean, she has the rough hands of a peasant girl who works, and not the hands of a lady, but she buys it. You know, she goes along with it. In this wonderful duet where he starts out singing to her, La ci darem la mano, give me your hand, and he'll take and show her all these wonders. And she is hesitant. She's coy at first. And then she decides, well, yes, maybe, why not? And she goes with him. And you know, by the end of the duet, Mary Charlotte, she is leading the way. So let's hear a little of this outrageous duet, La ci darem la mano, between Don Giovanni and Zerlina.
Oh,
And we are listening to music from Don Giovanni, talking about the Santa Fe Opera season with Desiree Mays. And this is, we just heard a duet between Don Giovanni and Zerlina, the peasant young woman, servant woman, whom he is just about to seduce.
He is. But before that, we have a little aria, his little mini aria. It's a little over a minute, which is really sort of describes what Don Giovanni is about. He's there and then he's gone like a puff of smoke. When it's convenient, he vanishes. And he has this effervescent quality to him. They call it sometimes the champagne aria because it's as if that bubbliness. And he is talking about wine. He's saying to Leporello, let's throw a party. And we'll have such a fantastic party. I'll add all these names to the catalog. And what he really wants to do is get close to Zerlina in the course of this. But let's hear this little effervescent, wonderful champagne aria by Don Giovanni, sung by Samuel Ramey. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, really, you get a sense of why this is not an altogether evil, bad character when he can sing music like that.
At the same time, the tone is so different from the loving, albeit fake loving, tone that he had with Zerlina in the duet before.
That's right. That's right. He's a chameleon. He can change as needed. And typically, the romantic lover in opera is sort of torn and longing and desperate. There's nothing desperate about this man.
No, he's
only desperate to add names to the list. So that's the thesis. He plans this big party and they invite everybody, and the three people who are so angry with him, Donna Anna, Donna Elvira, and Don Ottavio, come masked, and they are invited to join the party. They want to find out what's going on and try and catch him. Mozart does a wonderful thing at this point. He has three different dances being played on stage with three different rhythms, which is extraordinary. There's the dance for the aristocrats. They're dancing sort of a minuet. There's a contra dance with people, and then there's another group of which Zerlina is a part, the peasants who are partying. This is probably all out of doors, again in sort of no space place. But there are three different groups, and he moves effortlessly amongst them. He's called a mezzo carattere, a middle character, which says a lot. It means he can move between the aristocracy and the peasants. And maybe there's something of Mozart himself in this. He moved with such ease amongst the aristocracy and the people, and he believed in the Enlightenment, the ideas of the Enlightenment. As this party gets underway, Don Giovanni invites everyone. He says, Viva la libertà, viva liberty. And the audience got that. They're talking about freedom. This is a few years before the French Revolution. They want freedom from the laws, rules, regulations, from the aristocracy, the old way of life. It's about to change. But Mozart had to be careful, because if he was too critical of the aristocracy, and Don Giovanni is one of them, he would have been in trouble. It would have been a disaster. He does the same thing in The Marriage of Figaro. The Count is a philanderer. He lives exactly as he likes. He's trying to seduce people right, left, and center, but he can get away with it. And that's the fine line he and Lorenzo da Ponte had to tread. As long as it was done in a lighthearted style and you could laugh at it, the aristocracy laughed and they enjoyed this piece. But that was going on, Viva la Libertà. I bet you the audience, those first audiences got it. They knew what he was really saying.
Exactly.
Under that. So anyway, in the course of this ballroom scene, he takes Zerlina's hand. He leads her off into a private room, and a few minutes later she's screaming rape, and Mazzetto and the rest of the cast come rushing to her rescue in a room upstage, and she comes running out, and the Don, they think they have found the Don. He again has changed clothes with Leporello. They catch Leporello and they're about to beat him and give him a hard time when he is unmasked, and once again the Don has escaped. So let's play a little of the ensemble from the end of this first act. The end of the first act in every Mozart opera is always a sort of a time where he winds things up. It's full of excitement and amazement and storms. In this, there is a storm, and I must say, Mary Charlotte, the most spectacular storm I've ever seen at the Santa Fe Opera was the end of the first act of Don Giovanni.
No way!
It was as if Mozart was up there on cue doing thunder, lightning, the orchestra was sort of annihilated. The audience were on the edge of their seats. I've never seen anything like it. It was extraordinary. This music with the thunder and lightning from one of those monsoons.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been to the Santa Fe Opera, it's not that it doesn't have a roof. It has a roof, but you can see the horizon.
Yes, you can.
It's open. You can feel the wind blow.
That's
you
right.
Don't get too rained on, but you can get kind of cold.
Yeah, you can. It can cool off, but you see this happening. And in this opera, it's fantastic. So then in the second act, it's just a two-act piece. Don Giovanni and Leporello end up in a graveyard wanting to catch their breath, so to speak, and they notice a statue. And the statue is the statue of the Commendatore, and there's an inscription that says something like, "Here I await vengeance on the man that killed me." And Don Giovanni is very flippant. He invites the statue to dinner. He said, "If you're so great and wonderful, come to dinner." And lo and behold, the stone statue nods its head. Leporello freaks out. He says, "What's this going on here? This statue." But the statue has agreed to come to dinner. The final scene then is set indoors, the only really indoor scene in this piece. And the way the set has done it, with this great black sort of timeless, spaceless set, the entrances at the side are filled in, and they're filled in with great portraits of classical portraits of Mary Magdalene, but she's sort of half-dressed, so this is no saint, a very sensuous images, a sort of sensuousness that Don Giovanni exudes. And he's having dinner alone. Donna Vera comes in, she's begging with him to repent. He doesn't want to listen to her. Leporello is more interested in eating the leftovers, so to speak, which sort of sums up his life, when there's a knock at the door. And Leporello opens the door and the stone statue comes in. This is marvelous, pure melodrama. I mean, you can imagine how this builds up to this point.
And great fun for the costume and set designers.
Yeah, that's great. So, he's usually sort of 7 feet tall, this sort of fake with a voice that comes out of some part of a mask. And Giovanni invites him to join him for dinner. And he says, "No, I don't eat human food." But he says, "Will you come with me? Dammi la mano." That's a marvelous famous line, "Give me your hand," because it absolutely echoes the line that Don Giovanni used in his seductions with right. Zerlina, "Give me your hand." Here it comes again. Giovanni refuses, and the statue demands that he repent. He won't. So he takes his hand in a frozen grip, and he drags him off to the hellfire as fire erupts on stage and black devils, however they choose to do it. And that's sort of the end of the opera. I'm going to play you that bit, but there's a little tagline. In this time of Mozart, there was always a little moral of the piece. So once he has disappeared in hell and the flames have gone down, all the main characters come to the front of the stage and sing directly to the audience and tell them, well, what we're going to do with our lives now. Donna Anna will marry Don Ottavio in a year after she's got over her grieving. So it's not too passionate a relationship there. Donna Elvira's going back to the convent. Leporello's going to the local inn to find another master. And Zerlina will happily go back and have supper with Mazzetta. So it's got a happy, moralistic ending. Some opera companies choose to cut that in the romantic vein. You leave it high on that wonderful moment of the end. And how they choose to interpret Hellfire in this day and age is anybody's guess. I think we're having one of those really traditional, wonderful endings.
Right. Yeah. That, again, another opportunity for great artistic expression.
Yes, exactly.
Of designers.
So,
yeah.
So let's play a little of that Dammi la mano from the Commendatore at the end of Don Giovanni. And so ends Don Giovanni.
and if any of his girlfriends ever said to him, "Don, go to hell," well, he just did.
He did.
And so there ends the opera, and we've got just a few minutes left, and we want to let people know that there's a lot of different ways to get to the opera. You can drive your car, and you can have a tailgate party. And
yes, you can. People still do that. It's one of the big events and the unique things of the Santa Fe Opera. The theater itself and its setting on the hill is so spectacular. For people, we may take it a little for granted. We live here. We see it all the time. For people coming in, they are blown away by this beautiful house. And if they have the opportunity to tailgate, they will. So you take your car, whether it's a Rolls Royce, a truck, or whatever it is, doesn't matter. You can open the back and bring out cut china or fish and chips or whatever you want. And people eat and they party, and it's wonderful. The car park is alive and humming before the performances. That happens every night. You can go up 2 or 3 hours ahead of time.
You can also take a shuttle up and you can eat there.
Yes, for the shuttles come from hotels in Santa Fe and from Albuquerque. You need to reserve that, so you do that by calling the opera company and they will book you a place on the shuttle. That, if you live in Albuquerque, is a great idea, because going home late at night after the opera when you're in this altered state sometimes, better go with the shuttle and it'll take care of it for you. So there are many ways of going. You can also, if you don't want to prepare a meal, you don't want to stop in at Whole Foods on the way up, you can get a box dinner from the opera company itself. They have a new little restaurant area on the front now. They can be pre-ordered. Again, call the box office 986-5900 to book the shuttle and make arrangements for box dinners.
And you can also go to the Preview Buffet and hear Desiree Mays.
Yes, I talk at the Preview Buffet every night. About 180 people come each night. We sit and have a lovely dinner out in the open with the gorgeous gardens, and wine is served, and I come up with dessert and tell you a little bit about the opera of the day. It's a wonderful summer job.
In addition to your talks, Desiree, there's also another set of prelude talks.
Yes, there are. There is a charge, of course, to go to dinner. But if you choose to just go and hear a talk about the opera, there are the prelude talks. These are on the opera grounds, and they're free if you have a ticket to the performance that night. They're presented by Oliver Présent, does many of them. Sometimes people from production do them, and it's wonderful hearing it firsthand from production people. These talks are 2 hours and 1 hour before curtain time. It's the same talk repeated twice. But you can have a tailgate dinner with your box dinner, then go to the prelude talk, and then go to the opera. And I promise you, by then, you'll be in the totally appropriate frame of mind for the opera.
And sometimes, especially in the thick of the season, it's easier to get tickets to the earlier talk.
Well, they're free. Yeah, you can just walk into those.
I know, but sometimes, don't they fill up?
Yeah, it's better going to the earlier one. Go to the 1 2 hour. So if you're going to an 8 o'clock show in August, go at 6.
Right, and then you can have your tailgate afterwards.
That's right. And watch the sunset. I mean, it's a spectacular experience, a very holistic, very Santa Fe experience.
Yeah, it's a whole, like, it's not just the opera. It's the whole experience of getting there, being there, being among the people, eating,
the excitement,
don't drink
of performance.
Too much.
Yes, that's the other thing. And be careful what you eat.
Well, Desiree Mays, thanks again for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We've been talking to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller and author of the book Opera Unveiled. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. The Santa Fe Opera is on the web at santafeopera.org, and the phone number is 800-280-4654. The local number in Santa Fe is 505-986-5900. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.